The following recording is offered by the Village Zendo. For more information, please visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning. It's really a pleasure to be here with you this morning, sitting together. I was feeling this nice cool breeze all throughout our zazen, a great reminder that fall is upon us, changes in the air. And that's what our zazen is about, recognizing this flow, this change. Those of us sitting here right now are not the same people who walked through the door a few hours ago. We're new and fresh. And this whole place is also new and fresh. It may seem like the place you've sat all day today, that you've sat in for months or years, in fact, but it's different. This is a unique moment, unique gathering of people, of resources, of material, space, air, everything. It's unique in this moment, and we should appreciate that. This is our lives. My name is Fugan. I came down here this morning from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, where I live. And I practice with a small sangha out there, an affiliate of Village Zendo, called Hyannis Zendo. And our space is very small. It was a basement once. Still is a basement, technically, I suppose, but now it's also a zendo. It looks out through two big glass doors onto a marsh that flows out into the ocean. That space is also constantly changing and moving. It's a Buddha land. Just like this is the Buddha land that we've created today with our energy and our sincere practice. And so last week out on the Cape, we had our first nor'easter of the season, and that was a little bit early for us. And some of you guys know that's what we call these big winter storms, when cold air blows down from the north, and they can be quite extreme, especially out on Cape Cod, which is this little spit of sand going out into the ocean. And this particular storm sort of stalled out on the Cape for about 3 days. We had a massive windstorm, rains that were blowing horizontally off the ocean. All the trees behind the zendo were, bending and blowing, and things were flying. And fortunately, we had one of our practice periods right in the middle of this, and some people even showed up amazingly through this nor'easter. And we sat there for two periods on Wednesday night, and the lights are down, and the wind was blowing, and the trees were slapping, and rain was everywhere, and it was just pure energy. That's what it was. And the day after the storm, I went over to the beach, the same beach I go to as often as I can, almost every day. And it was totally transformed. People's docks had blown away. The sea walls were, some were covered, some were totally uncovered. Some of the dunes that had been there for a long time had disappeared, and others had formed, you know, down the beach a ways. And on this one particular part that I love, the dunes had blown away so much that there was now water flowing from a different inland marsh out to the ocean. Really, totally new. And so I was sitting there, and the sky was perfectly blue, this kind of light that we seem to get on the Cape in the fall, this sort of golden, brilliant light. And the ocean was like glass. It was boundless. And the beach was totally new and eternally the beach, just like it always is. And so I was reminded of Ryokan's poem. Ryokan, the poet who we studied last winter in our winter ango. Sky above, great wind. Sky above, great wind. Tenjo Daifu. Ryokan Taigu. He was an 18th and early 19th century Japanese monk. And he was known for his love of children, his unvarnished clarity, and his insight. And he wrote this poem for a child who wanted calligraphy for paper to make a kite. And it's playful and simple. You know, sky above, great wind. It's sky and wind, perfect for a kite. Right? It couldn't be more perfect. And it also reflects Ryokan's deep insight and his complete freedom. The sky above and the great wind blowing, just everywhere, nonstop. Writing about the way of Zen, Keizan Jokin, who was Dogen Zenji's grand disciple, Dogen, the founder of our school, our sect of Zen, used similar language about six centuries earlier. He wrote, "The wind of the way, circulating everywhere, is harder than diamond. The whole earth is supported by it." So this is Ryokan's wind, and it's the wind that blew through the Cape for 3 days last week. And it was blowing through the window earlier, and is blowing through us right now. Can you hear it? So this morning I'd like to return for a little while to Vimalakirti. This is the ideal lay person. And we've been enjoying the Vimalakirti Sutra as a community since this summer. During our summer intensive practice period, we started studying the Vimalakirti Sutra again. And Vimalakirti was an Indian man who lived in a thriving town in the northeast of India called Vaishali. In the sutra, it places him around the time of the historical Buddha, in fact, in the lifetime of the historical Buddha, contemporary, so maybe 500 before the Common Era, somewhere around there. And Vimalakirti was a businessman, a family man, a lay person. And in the sutra, it says that Vimalakirti frequented the crossroads in order to bring benefit to others. Right? And here we are also at the crossroads, Broadway and Houston. And here we are to bring benefit to one another, to the world. This is our bodhisattva vow. This is our intention because of our compassion to help others. And it's manifest right now. It has been all morning. Vimalakirti, the sutra tells us, entered the government offices and courts of law so as to aid and rescue all that he could. And in the sutra, we find Vimalakirti at the end of his life, teaching the great way from his sickbed. So at the time this sutra takes place, Shakyamuni Buddha was staying nearby in the Amra Gardens with a vast assembly that included thousands of his disciples and tens of thousands of bodhisattvas. These bodhisattvas had fantastic names like Bodhisattva Eloquent Sound, Bodhisattva Merit Forms and Adornments, Bodhisattva Never Resting, Bodhisattva Constantly Raised Hand. What's that about? And there were also 10,000 Brahma kings, loads and loads of Indras, assorted devas, heavenly beings, and mythical creatures. All of them were gathered together to hear the Dharma. And this vast retinue of beings was staying in a mango grove donated to the Sangha by Amrapali, who herself was a famous courtesan in Vaishali, a dancer, an artist, an educated woman, who became a disciple of the Buddha's and donated this grove to the Sangha. And this massive community came together and fit in this mango grove, in this Buddha land that they created with their intention for saving all beings. So some of you know that my adopted father, Frank Dineen, passed away recently at the end of September. And he had spent his career working for the poor, for the underserved, first as a community lawyer, and then as the founding director of the Legal Aid Society in New Haven. And he worked there from the early 60s, about 1964, until earlier this year. And he spent his life literally entering the courts of law to aid and rescue all that he could. And Frank had been unwell, and I got a call in early September that he was in the emergency room and it was a dire situation. And so I immediately left Boston where I was working and made my way, rushed down to New Haven. And on the way, I heard from my partner, Seijin, who many of you know. She's a nurse practitioner, and she was working out on the Cape. And amazingly, through the speakerphone to the ER from her office on Cape Cod, she made the decision to give Frank a treatment that kept him from bleeding out that morning. And in the Vimalakirti Sutra, she might have been called Bodhisattva Clear Mind Cell Phone User. That's what I thought. And when I finally got to New Haven, I immediately parked in the wrong parking lot. And then this Bodhisattva compassionate parking lot attendant pointed me in the right direction. And he even left his little booth and went out into the street and really helped me get to the right entrance where I needed to go. And I was in a fog by this point, and fortunately ran into Bodhisattva named hospital administrator on her way to work, who took me by the hand, literally, and got me to the ER. And for the rest of that day and, for the weeks that followed, I kept encountering all these bodhisattvas. And they saw us through this very difficult time. And so I spent a lot of September in Frank's sick room, first in the emergency room, then upstairs in the hospital, and later in hospice. And in the ER, we spent about 18 hours in a little, quote, room, which was really just this teeny curtained-in space that it was very small. Only one of us, my mother and I, one of us could sit down at a time in there. And whenever the staff had to come in, we had to sort of get out of the way because there was not enough room in that teeny little room for people to be there. And so when I was there, I was thinking about Vimalakirti's sick room. And even though he was a wealthy man, his sick room is described as small and narrow in the sutra. And when all these bodhisattvas that were with the Buddha, all these dharma kings and devas and mythical beings, these giant Garuda birds and all these gods and deities and disciples finally decided to visit Vimalakirti, they had a problem. Shariputra looked into this small room and he got a little bit nervous. He said to himself, all these bodhisattvas and major disciples, where are they going to sit? And Vimalakirti saw Shariputra's concern, and so he had 32,000 lion thrones brought from Sumeru Lamp King's realm into this teeny little sick room. And so the world they call Sumeru shape, the sutra says, lies beyond countries numerous as the sands of 36 Ganges. The Buddha there, who is named for Mount Sumeru, is large. He's described as being 84,000 yojanas in height, and his thrones, these 32,000 thrones, are equally as big. And contemporary scholars put one yojana somewhere between 2 and 10 miles in size. So these inconceivably enormous chairs, 32,000 of them, fit into Vimalakirti's sick room. The Japanese Zen master Hakuin tells us that crossing 36 Ganges is us crossing to the other shore, seeing clearly into who we are through our assiduous Zazen practice. It is, according to Hakuin, the moment when our consciousness of the 10,000 things, the eighth consciousness, which is our store consciousness, inverts, when it flips over. Or as Dogen says, when the 10,000 things advance and confirm the self, this is enlightenment. Vimalakirti calls this emancipation beyond comprehension. As I sat tucked into the corner of this teeny little hospital room, I wondered about this vastness, this space beyond comprehension, but of course, it couldn't be comprehended. I practiced a little bit of Sung San's phrase, only go straight, don't know. Don't make anything. And I followed Ankyo Roshi's advice to be there for what was coming up. Beyond comprehension, presence, present to the loss that was happening. Just sadness and gratitude. Each comes and stays a bit. Maybe during your zazen today, you had some sense of gratitude or sadness, disappointment, anxiety, joy. Each comes and stays a bit. And it's boundless, this beyond comprehension, this don't know mind. So when we sit here on our cushions in this small square that we've bound ourselves to, how do we experience this boundlessness? How do we create this Buddha land? There's a koan from the Blue Cliff Record that speaks to this. A monk asked Yun Men, "How is it when the tree withers and the leaves fall?" Yun Men said, "Body exposed in the golden wind." And this phrase, golden wind, indicates autumn, the fall. And here in the Northeast, we're blessed to have a season of dramatic change in the fall. Big storms like the nor'easter, the beautiful light, the days getting shorter, the leaves brilliant. And this is the harvest season as well. Time to reap and celebrate the bounty of the land. The colors, the smells, the preciousness is heightened because we know that deep down it's changing, it's fleeting. It's a time when we can viscerally understand living because we recognize that our lives are fleeting. And the monk asks, "How is it when the tree withers and the leaves fall?" I think he's asking, what happens to us when we and those we love grow old, become sick, when they die, when we face our own death? Another name for the Buddha is Great Physician King, healer of old age, sickness, and death. Yun Men answered the monk, "Body exposed in the golden wind." In another translation, Yun Men says, "Golden wind revealed." There's another translation, "The golden wind manifesting itself." And in yet another, Yun Men simply says, "Golden wind." The wind of the Dharma that continuously circles the globe, harder than diamonds. All of us, all beings everywhere are supported by it. I like the translation that includes the body exposed in the golden wind, because it brings the phrase directly home to us. In the emergency room, that golden wind was blowing. In the sick room, in the hospice, his body, my body, the nurses, the CNAs, the doctors, all of us exposed in this golden wind. And as Frank's friends and colleagues came by to express their love and really their gratitude for his life, the golden wind is revealed in his struggle and suffering, in our struggle and suffering, it's revealed. Hakuin said, "In the radiance of the Buddha Sumeru, the Lamp King's illumination, the karmic suffering caused by the 84,000 passions becomes at once the Buddha Sumeru Lamp King's marvelously subtle form. The 84,000 types of suffering are inverted, and suddenly they become this massive, inconceivably large Buddha nature's form. And as we sit here, our bodies are this subtle form. All our aches and pains, fears, desires, delusions are this form, this great golden wind. And we are fully exposed to it right now. So I think I'll close with a short poem that's tucked up in my sleeve somewhere. A cool autumn breeze blows through the village Zendo. Countless Buddha lands